नमो विष्णुपदाय कृष्णप्रेष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्तिवेदान्तस्वामिनिति नामिनि नमस्ते सारस्वतीदेवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेषशून्यवादि पाश्चात्यदेशतारिणि जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैतगदाधर शिवासादि गौरभक्तवृंद हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्णा। सो थैंक यू ऑल वेरी मच फॉर ज्वाइनिंग टुडे सेशन। We have been discussing from the seventh chapter of Bhagavad Gita. The chapter is titled as Vijnana Yoga, Knowledge of the Absolute. So, I'll do a quick recap of what we have seen till now. So, we saw that in the first six chapters, Krishna described about Gunibhuta Bhakti or secondary practices where bhakti is secondary. So like karma yoga, jnana yoga and ashtanga yoga. In the third chapter, he introduced the concept of karma yoga and explained nishkama karma yoga. And in the fourth chapter, he described about the practice of nishkama karma yoga and how it matures into jnana. That was described in the fourth chapter. And in the fifth chapter, he described jnana yoga of two types. One is karma sannyas, another is grihastha sannyas. And then in the sixth chapter, he described about how that liberation which can be obtained by jnana yoga can also be obtained by ashtanga yoga. And he described ashtanga yoga. And towards the end, he described karmi tapasvibhyodiko yogi jnanibhyopi matodikaha karmibhyaschadiko yogi tasmad yogi bhavarjuna. So he described how of all the yogis who have been described till now, the ashtanga yogi is the best, therefore Arjuna become an ashtanga yogi. But because Krishna had not yet described about bhakti, he introduces bhakti in the very last verse of that chapter, which is yoginam api sarvesham madgate nantaratmana shraddhavan bhajate yo mam samay yuktatamo matah. So he describes about how a person who worships me unalloyed devotion, he is the best. He introduces bhakti yogi there. He introduces bhakti yoga there. Madgatena antaratmana, shraddhavan bhajate. So he uses the word shraddhavan bhajate. He performs bhajan like that. But he does not exactly describe who is that person who does that shraddhavan bhajan. So he describes that person in the first verse of the second seventh chapter. Maya saktamana partha yogam yunjan madashraya asamshayam samagram mam yatajnyasasi tachunu. So he describes bhakti yogi. He says that his mind is attached to Krishna. Maya saktamana, which means he is anyabhilashita shunyam. He has no other abhilasha other than the desire to achieve Krishna. And yogam yunjan, he aspires to establish a relationship with Krishna in one of the five gunas, in one of the five rasas. And madashrayaha, he is surrendered only to Krishna, not to any demigods, not to any other process like karma, jnana, yoga, etc. So, and by that he says, yata gyasyasi, then by this process, one can perfectly understand Krishna. This is bhakti yoga. Okay. So then he continues this by telling that jnanam teham sa vijnanam idam vakshyam yasheshatah yad jnatva neha boyonyad jnatavyam avashishyate. He says that asheshatah te aham vakshyami. I explained to you in detail. Jnanam sa vijnanam. knowledge of my powers as long as knowledge of my sweetness. And knowing this, nothing else remains to be known. Like that he says. So, jnana refers to knowledge of Krishna's powers and vijnana refers to knowledge of Krishna's sweetness. So, he starts describing the rarity of this process. Manushyanam sahasreshu kaschid yatati siddhaye yatatam api siddhanam kaschin mam vetti tatvatah. Amongst thousands of men, some attain success in their endeavors. Amongst those who attain success, hardly anyone knows me. So, which means there are many people who may practice different types of yogas, but they cannot understand Krishna completely. Only by the practice of bhakti yoga, one can attain, one can understand Krishna properly. So, here he says, first the Lord speaks the rarity of realizing the sweetness of the Lord amongst those persons. So, only those, so the other practitioners may understand about the powers of the Lord to some extent, but they can never understand the sweetness of the Lord, which is possible only by the process of bhakti. And here he says, such practitioners of bhakti are very, very rare. Manushyanam sahasreshu kaschid yatati siddhaye yatatam api siddhanam kaschin mam veti tatvatah. Then, he talks about understanding Krishna means understanding his energies first, because Krishna is the energetic. So, knowing about his powers means his energies. So, he describes first the material energy. Bhumirapo analo vayu kammano buddhirevacha ahankara iti yamme binna prakritir ashtada. So, we saw that these eight things, which can further be expanded into 25, are Krishna's separated energy, which is the material energy, Bahiranga Shakti. Apareyam itastu anyam prakritim vidhime param jiva bhutam mahabaho yayedam daryate jagat. He says that iyam apara, what I have mentioned is the external energy or the inferior energy, but understand, my dear Arjuna, that me param prakritim, that I have a superior energy, itastu anyam, which is different from what I have discussed till now, which is the material energy. Jiva bhutam mahabaho, O Arjuna, this is the jiva. Yaya idam dharyate jagat. And why is this jiva superior to the material energy? Because the jiva utilizes this material energy for his own enjoyment. He tries to exploit the material energy for his own enjoyment. That is why the jiva is mentioned to be superior to the material energy. Yetad yonini bhutani sarvani tyupadaraya aham krishnasya jagatah prabhava pralayastata. My dear Arjuna, understand that if anything that you see in this universe have their origin in these two energies. You know, it is generally a combination of these two energies, or it is just a manifestation of one of these energies. Okay. It could either be a Jadavastu, which is made of the Bahiranga Shakti, or if it is a living entity, then the living entity in itself is made of the Jiva Shakti, and his body is made of the material energy. So whatever you see in this material universe is a combination of these two. But aham krishnasya jagatah prabhava pralayastata. But know, O Arjuna, that I am the origin and dissolution of the whole universe. Okay. I am the origin of whole universe because the two energies are his energies. Etad yonini bhutani sarvani tyupadaraya. Understand that whatever you see in this world, they have their origin in these two energies, but I am the original origin because these two are my energies only. They are my energies only. Okay. And then pralayastata, I am also the destroyer, since everything merges into my body at the time of death, at the time of dissolution. So we were discussing this concept last week. This concept where Krishna uses the word aham, maya, etc., meaning I, mine, by me, and all that, indicating some other expansion of Krishna. So Krishna is the source of all these expansions. So when Krishna addresses this expansions as me, it is not wrong. So even though here when Krishna says aham krishnasya jagatah, so when aham krishnasya jagatah prabhavah, I am the source of everything. Why? Because the source is the two energies, but they are my energies, but they are not Krishna's energies directly. They are the energies of Karanodaka Sai Vishnu. But because Karanodaka Sai Vishnu is an expansion of Krishna, therefore it is not inappropriate for Krishna to say that aham prabhavah, I am the source. And I am the destruction, also Krishna says, because all the universes and everything, at the time of dissolution, it rests in my body. But does it rest in Krishna's body? No, it rests in Karanodaka Sai Vishnu's body. But because Krishna is the Amshi, he is the source of all these expansions. Therefore, when he says it rests in me, it is not wrong. Okay. But the Amsha cannot claim to be performing the pastimes of the Amshi. Example, Karanodaka Sai Vishnu cannot say, "Oh, I stole butter." It would be inappropriate because the Amsha cannot claim to, like for example, let's say if there is a, the owner of the Ford company. Okay. So Mr. Ford says that, "Oh, you want to see the latest car that that I manufactured?" And then he shows the car. But in reality, he must have probably not visited the factory even once during the production of that car. He was not even have fitted one nut or bolt in that car. But he says that, "You want to see the latest car that I have manufactured?" So is it wrong? No, because he's the owner and whoever is working are his employees. So it is inappropriate. It is not inappropriate for him to say that that I manufactured it. Okay. But one of his employees, if let's say if Mr. Ford had signed a check, okay, the employee cannot say, "Oh, this is the check that I signed." He cannot say like that because he's whatever the, but of course he can say that, "Oh, I manufactured the bolt of this car." He can say that because that is his job. That Ford can also say. But whatever Ford does, the expansion cannot say. His employee cannot say, "I signed the check." "Oh, you came to, I own this company." He cannot say that, right? So therefore, if you see the this is a very subtle point that you see in the whole of Bhagavad Gita, which goes very much unnoticed, is Krishna's usage is words, maya, aham, etc. For example, in the next verse, if you see, Krishna says that Matta parataram nanyat kinchidasti dhananjaya mayi sarvamidam protam sutre manigana iva. There is nothing superior to me, O Arjuna. Everything is pervaded by me as pearls are strung on a thread. So everything is pervaded by me in the form of Kshirodaka Sai Vishnu, the Paramatma. Okay. But because Paramatma is his expansion, therefore it is not inappropriate for Krishna to say everything is pervaded by me. Okay. It's not inappropriate because Krishna is the source. Krishna is the expansion. Right. So therefore he says, because of this, I am everything. This is expressed in this verse. There is nothing superior to me because I am both the cause and effect. I am the Shakti and the Shaktiman. Therefore, he says that there is nothing superior to me. And having said that, I am also pervading in everything in the form of Paramatma. Just as pearls are strung on a thread. Okay. So the thread is never seen. The pearls are very explicitly seen. Okay. But if the thread is not there, the pearls cannot stay together in the form of a necklace. Okay. So similarly, as Paramatma, he gives life to everything that we see in this material world. Krishna gives, Krishna in the form of Paramatma gives life. In the sense, he empowers them to exhibit their dharma. So we were discussing this point last time that Krishna or the Paramatma is the source of life of even inanimate objects. But if they have life, then why are they called inanimate? So here when we say he is the source of life, what it means is that he is he empowers them to exhibit their dharma or nature. Like sugar is sweet. Why? Because Paramatma is empowering sugar to exhibit its dharma of sweetness. Similarly, salt is salty. Like that. So, like we saw the example of, you know, we say that, oh, this battery is dead. We do use such terminologies, right? This battery is dead. Which means, are batteries, or then was it alive till now? So, which means, is the battery a living entity? No, not in that sense. A live a battery which is not dead means it is performing its function of charging. So when it is unable to perform its function of charging, then it is called dead. So dead means when something is unable to exhibit its dharma, it is called as dead. Right. So similarly, actually the Lord is called as, Shukadev Goswami calls the Lord as Bhungte Gunan Shodasha Shodashatmakaha Solankrishishta Bhagavan Vachamsime. Like that he says. Shodasha Shodashatmakaha. You are the life of all matter. Matter itself is dead. Then how can the Lord be the life of matter? Here the meaning of life of matter means he empowers them to exhibit their dharma. That is what it means. Okay. So as Paramatma, So not only is he is their source of manifestation, and not only he is the source of their destruction, but he is also the source of their maintenance that he is describing in this seventh verse. Matta parataram nanyat kinchidasti dananjaya mayi sarvamidam protam sutre manigana iva. And then the next series of verses he is going to describe how Krishna is the source and Krishna is also the essence of everything. Rasoham apsukaunteya prabhasmi sasi shurya yoho pranavah sarva vedeshu shabdakke paurusham rushu. So he says that I am the taste of water. Okay. So we saw last time the elemental creation, how it happens. So taste is the source of water, because as we saw in the elemental creation, water is created from the tanmatra of taste, or the prabhasmi sasi shurya yoho. I am the light of the sun and moon. So light is the essence of sun and moon. So basically in this series of verses, Krishna is going to describe that how he is the source of everything and he is also the essence of everything. Pranavah sarva vedeshu. I am the pranava in the Vedas. So this is, he is the source of the Vedas, you know, because the Vedas are born of pranava. I am the sound in ether. Okay. Again, we saw ether is created out of sound in the elemental creation. So therefore, he is the source of ether, like that. And then, punyo gandha prithivyamcha tejas chasmi vibhavaso jivanam sarvabhuteshu tapas chasmi tapasvishu. So further, he describes how he is either the source of everything or the essence of everything. He is the fragrance of the element earth. He is the heat in fire. The fragrance is the source of earth. Heat is the essence of fire. And the life in all living entities is the essence of all living entities. And austerity is the essence of one who is a tapasvi or an austere person, like that. And then he says, Bijam mam sarvabhutanam viddhi partha sanatanam buddhir buddhimatamasmi tedas tedas vinamaham. I am the eternal original cause of all living entities. I am the intelligence of the intelligent and the majesty of the majestic. Which means, whatever you see, he is either the source of it or he is the essence of it. Like that Krishna describes here. Okay. Balam balavatam chaham kama raga vivarjitam dharma viruddho bhuteshu kamosmi bharatarshava. I am the strength of the strong which is devoid of lust and anger. I am that lust which is according to dharma, O best of Bharata. Like that. And then he says, he concludes by telling, Echaiva sattvika bhava rajasas tamasas chaye matta eveti tan viddi natvaham teshu temai. Know, O Arjuna, that anything that you see in this world, either in sattvaguna or rajoguna or tamoguna, matta eva, everything comes from me. I am not in them, but they are in me. So I am not in them means I am not dependent on them, but they are dependent on me. That's what he means. Okay. So this is where we ended our discussion last week, last Friday. Before we continue this discussion further today, if there are any quick discussion points, comments, questions, anything anyone would like to share as add, you can please go ahead. Either you can raise your hands or type your questions in the chat box, whatever you feel comfortable. Any quick discussion points, comments, questions? Oh, okay, yes, Ramacharya Prabhu.
Hare Krishna Prabhu.
Yes, Prabhu.
Prabhu, so I need some clarification. So, Gyan Yoga and Ashtanga Yoga is for Sayujya Mukti. Mm-hmm. Pradhan Bhuta Bhakti is for Salokya. But mm-hmm. then there is other four liberations, Sarsisthi, Samipya. So, who are the devotees who get that destination? I understand Salokya part, and also I understand the Sayujya Mukti part. But there are four more.
No, that also, Salokya means it includes Sarsthi. Salokya means Salokyadi. It is not just Salokya. Salokya, etc. You know, they may get the same opulence as the Supreme Lord. That is also possible. You know, there is Sarsthi. Samipya, they may get some closeness to the Supreme Lord also. That is also possible. But without prema. But prema one can get only by practice of pure devotional service. But one may attain Salokya, Sarsthi, Samipya, Sarupya, even the same form of Krishna, that they may get, but without prema. But prema one can get only by practice of pure devotional service. Rest all one can get by practice of mixed devotional service. If one has to get prema, then one has to practice pure devotional service.
Okay, Prabhu. And then in the second verse, Gyan refers to Aishwarya, you said, and Bigyan refers to Madhurya. That's what it is?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So that means, I think I heard the lecture also very carefully. So you were saying that Aishwarya is prerequisite for one to understand the Lord's Madhurya's.
Yeah, yeah. Knowledge of one's Aishwarya is very critical. Otherwise, we will. It can lead to sahajiya understanding. You know, you don't properly understand who Krishna is. And then we may end up thinking that Krishna is just like an ordinary person who is, you know, just like an ordinary child. So we may think, oh, how cute, you know, Krishna is crawling, Krishna is eating. But it may not necessarily generate the proper kind of respect for Krishna. It may just be like, you know, relishing some, you know, some movie type. But if one has to properly appreciate Krishna's sweetness, one has to first appreciate Krishna's Aishwarya. It's very very important.
Thank you, Prabhu. Can I ask one more question around Pradhan and Prabhu? So in Bhagavatam, I think it's mentioned in the third canto that based upon devotees' explanation, there are 11 elements, there are 13 elements, there are 17 elements, there are 24, 23, 28. There are so many numbers given there. So which one normally in our communication should we use 28 most of the time, 24? Do you have any recommendation that what is the actual number? Should we say that there are 24 elements for the material creation? Or should we say, I mean, what we should say? Because sometimes audience also may get confused if the audience does not have the background.
Yeah. So, so when you say a number, then you explain how you arrived at that number. That is a safer way of doing it. So sometimes when Krishna says, oh, this number is also right, this number is also right. So like, for example, here, Krishna says 8. Okay. 8 is 8 wrong? No, 8 is correct. But when he says ahankara, that ahankara includes the products of ahankara, which is generally, you know, how much? 17 in number. Okay. So 17 plus 7 or 17 or 18 in number. Okay, 18 plus 7 becomes 25. Okay, so if you say 25, 25 is also right. If you say 8, 8 is also right. As long as, but what is Krishna telling? Krishna is not just telling the number. He is listing what are those 8. So then for now, it is sufficient if you understand 8. Later in Bhagavatam, he will expand those 8 also. You know how there are products of ahankar, products of false ego. Then there is products of false ego in mode of goodness, products of false ego in mode of passion, products of false ego in the mode of ignorance, and how it manifests. Total 25 elements. How these 25 elements join together to form a fully functional universe. These things are described in detail in Bhagavatam. So when you tell a number, when you explain how you arrived at that number, then it is fine. No problem. Otherwise, it may. If you just tell them that there are, some people say that there is 18, some people say there is 8, some people say there is 24, some people say there is 5, and leave it just like that, then people will get confused. Then which is right, which is wrong, like that. So you can explain. You don't have to tell all that if it is beginning audience. Just tell them that there are 24 elements, and then you tell, you enumerate those 24 and show them, okay, this is how you arrive at 24, like that.
Thank you, Prabhu. Hare Krishna.
Okay, there is a question in the chat box. As Krishna is describing his energies, it seems like it is all about energies only. The personal features seem obscured. Well, because if Krishna has to, that is why he is constantly using the word aham, aham, aham. Is aham not a personal address? Mattaha, aham. It's a personal address. And then he is describing the energies. Of course, he has to describe the energies. But it's not that the whole Bhagavad Gita is only energies. In the whole of Bhagavad Gita, there is a lot of personal things that are described. But if we just take a small section where Krishna has dedicated that section to describe about his energies, he has to speak about the energies only. But if one takes only those section of energies and think that, oh, this is obscuring the personal form. Yes, it will obscure the personal form if you read only that section. But that section is only a small section of Bhagavad Gita. In the rest of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna's personal form, his personal qualities, everything is described in detail about his birth. Fourth chapter you read, Janma Karma Chame Divyam Evam Yo Veti Tatpataha, about his birth activities, Yada Yada Hi Dharmasya Glanir Bhavati Bharata, when he descends, why he descends, what does he do, Ye Yatamam Prapadyante, how does he reciprocate with worship, and all that. These are all personal. But when Krishna has dedicated a particular section, small section of Bhagavad Gita, to describe about his energies, he has to that description. So, but if someone says, oh, based on this description, the personal form is getting obscured. Yes, it will get obscured as long as if you read only that section. But if you read the whole Bhagavad Gita, Krishna's personal form, his qualities are very vividly portrayed in many other sections. Is that relevant, Prabhu? Yes, Shyamlal Prabhu.
So, Prabhuji, this normally comes up in disc.
You muted yourself, Prabhu.
Generally, hello.
Yeah, yes, Prabhu.
Yeah. So, in discussions, or you know, when you're preaching or giving a lecture, or that this is all. It seems as though the Mayavadis also have a strong point.
Uh-huh.
I mean, when we preach, we are always speaking about the personal form of the Lord. That is where the catch is. I mean, we know that in the later sections and so many places, Krishna is speaking about his person and everything. But when it comes to here, I mean, how do we say this section of the Bhagavad Gita is also it's also related to the person? You get my, I mean, I do not know whether I'm putting it correctly.
Yeah, I understood your point too. I understood your point. So how do I know, how can I tell that this section is also talking about expressing the personal form of Krishna? So when Krishna starts this section, if you see, he says, Bhumir apo analo vayu kammano buddhirevacha ahankare iti yam me binna prakriti. So he is calling it clearly as, this is my external energy. He does not say I energy, he says my energy, which clearly means Krishna is a person. And anyways, we can very clearly say how this section also speaks about person. But then the point is, we are not supposed to take independent verses or sections of any book to establish a complete Siddhanta. Because not every single verse of Bhagavad Gita or Bhagavatam is meant to present a complete Siddhanta. All of them, they contribute towards establishing the complete Siddhanta, but no single verse can encapsulate the complete Siddhanta of Bhagavatam in all its details. So therefore, there is a logic with which you have to understand the Shastras, which has to be discussed. Otherwise, okay, the Mayavadis can say something, we can say something, that is always there, but we have to understand, okay, let us sit together and try to understand, how do we understand Shastras? What is the procedure? So the Srila Jiva Goswami says, Purva apara anurodena konvarto abhimato bhavet iti adyam ohanam tarkaha shushka tarkam tu varjayet. So he says that what is the right means of understanding the Shastras? He says, oh, you should know what was spoken before, what was spoken later, who speaks it, to whom does he speak, was it spoken as an instruction, was it a casual talk, was it spoken sarcastically, was it spoken jokingly. All these things have to be understood before coming to a conclusion. Otherwise, the Mayavadis may say, oh, Krishna says that rasoham upsukaunteya. This says that absolute truth is impersonal. Okay, so then we say, fine. Okay, based on this, you are telling, right? So what does Krishna say before? What does Krishna say later? What is the context of that verse? So that is the most intelligent way of understanding. So because the most important aspect of a conversation is the context of that conversation, right? So if you don't know the context, if you are having a conversation with a person, which has a very long context or a deep context, and a person who does not understand that context will take a particular statement and he will come to different conclusions. Like, say, for example, you know, sometimes things are spoken in allegorical ways also. There are some figures of speech which are particular to a particular language. But if a person is not aware of that, then he may misunderstand the whole thing. Like, for example, in Hindi, if you say that, goda bech ke so raha hai, that there is a phrase like that. Goda bech ke so raha hai matlab, when literally translated, it would mean like he has sold the horse and he is sleeping. You know, that's what it literally means. He has sold the horse and sleeping. But what it actually means is that he's completely carefree. He's completely carefree. That is the meaning. So what he wants to communicate through this phrase has nothing to do with horse, nothing to do with selling or buying. But one who may not understand this, he may literally take it and he say, oh, why did he goda kyun becha usne? Why did he sell the horse? Kala goda tha ki safed goda tha? You know, was it a white horse or a black horse? He may ask such questions because he does not understand that this is actually a figure of speech, right? So, therefore, individual verses can be misinterpreted in multiple ways. So that is why that is not the way in which we understand anything. So therefore, you go few verses before, few verses after. No. If you have to show the personal form through this verse only, yeah, but this verse is a part of a bigger conversation, na? So if you don't if you are unwilling to understand the bigger conversation and you want me to prove something based on one particular sentence that Krishna speaks, then it is not a very intelligent way of understanding the whole subject matter. So therefore, Krishna few verses before only he talks about this is my energy. So then when he has established that, then he is explaining about his energies. So all that we need to do is to go a few verses before. That's all. And that is the right way of understanding the Shastras. So, is that relevant?
Thank you, Prabhu. Thank you for that detailed explanation. Thank you.
Hare Krishna. Anything else before we move forward to today's discussion? Yes, Ramacharya.
Sorry, Prabhu, keep on asking, but we are on the context. That's what I'm trying to understand that. So in second canto, there is mention of five element, dravya, kal, karma, swabhav, and jiva. So does that five element that is mentioned in second canto, fifth chapter, talks about same of these 25 or 28 elements, or those are different?
Well, the 25 elements that are mentioned here, okay, let us see. Dravyam karmacha kalascha swabhavo jiva evacha. That is what the verse says. Dravyam karma kala swabhava jiva. Okay. So, no. So, here karma and swabhava belong to the jiva. So, jiva, the jiva's two shaktis are karma and swabhava. And then there is kala shakti. So, kala is also another energy of Krishna. So, time is the 26th element. Jiva is the 27th element. So, it does not, and only dravya, which is mentioned, that dravya is the 25. 25 falls under dravya. Karma is different, kala is different, jiva is different, swabhava is different. These four are different. Karma and swabhava belong to the jiva. They are jiva shakti. And then jiva itself is one of them. So, so then 24 are products of pradhan. 25 is pradhan itself. 26th is the jiva. 27th is kala. And 28th is Krishna. So in that way, Kapiladev talks about 28. But in the 28, the 24 that we talk about are products of pradhan. Pradhan itself is 25th. Exactly.
Thank you so much, Prabhuji. I don't know, so many doubts that I had over years is getting cleared. Really appreciate, Prabhuji. Thank you so much. So thankful for your
correction. Okay. If there are no further discussion points, comments, or questions, then we will move on to today's discussion. So today we are going to discuss about how Krishna controls the modes. So one should surrender unto Krishna. So Krishna says here, Tribir gunamayair bhavair evis sarvamidam jagat mohitam nabijanati mamebhya paramavyayam. So he says, Sarvam idam jagat. This whole world, mohitam, is bewildered. Ebihi, by these, tribir, three, gunamayair bhavayir. So, the whole world is bewildered by objects and persons made of the three gunas. Okay. So, the whole world which is bewildered by objects and persons made of the three gunas, Mamna abhijanati, does not know me. Okay. Mamna abhijanati. And who am I? Avyayam. I am the unchanging. Ebhyah param. And I am above all of those things. I am unchanging and I am above all of those things. I am above this. These three modes and products of the three modes, including this material world. But the whole world is bewildered by the objects and persons made of the three modes. And because of that, they do not know me. So, there is, Krishna talks about knowledge in the mode of goodness, knowledge in the mode of passion, knowledge in the mode of ignorance. But by all of one cannot know Krishna, because Krishna is beyond the three modes. Right? So, therefore, but because people's knowledge is bound within the three modes, therefore one cannot understand Krishna, because he is beyond the three modes. But because people of this world are bewildered by the three modes, ebir tribir gunamayair bhavair mohitam, therefore, Mamna abhijanati, they do not know me, who am unchanging and above all these things. Okay. This is what Krishna is telling. Srila Vishnu Chakra Thakur commenting on this, he says, Then, if you are all things, why do people not know you, the Supreme Lord? So, because Krishna says, in the previous section, Krishna mentioned, whatever you see, know that all things in Sattva, Rajas, Tamas, they all come from me. I am not in them, but they are in me. And then he says, Balam Balavatam Chaham Kamaraga Vivarjitam. I am the strength of the strong. I am the lust, which is according to Dharma. I am the eternal original cause of all living entities. I am the intelligence of the intelligent. I am the majesty of the majestic. I am the fragrance of earth element. Everything Krishna says. So if everything is you, then why don't people know you? Why don't people know you, the Supreme Lord? So he says, all the jivas born in the universe, being bewildered by the states such as sense and mind control, in the mood of goodness, jubilation in the mode of passion, sense and mind control in the mode of goodness, jubilation in the mode of passion, lamentation in the mode of ignorance, stemming from the nature of the gunas, do not know me, who am superior to them and without change, since I am beyond the gunas. Okay. So they are influenced by the three modes, so therefore they cannot understand Krishna, but because Krishna is beyond the three modes. What did I do? Okay, I again made a mistake here. So I will fix this, but before I fix that mistake, I just wish to, even though I have discussed this before, I just wish to discuss this once more, because this is a very important point that we need to understand, which is how do the three modes affect people? You know, this is something which I have discussed before, and I recently discussed this in one of my classes. I wish to discuss it right now. Just give me 1 second. I will search that and cut paste that here so that I can explain the same thing to you. Just give me 1 minute. I will just do the same. Okay. So how the three modes affect the living entities? What is the scope of the three modes? You know, what does the three modes and affect, and how do they affect the in this material world? That's something I just wish to very quickly touch upon that point. Just give me 1 second, because recently I discussed this in detail in one of the sessions. I have it ready. I just have to pull it out of there, that place. Okay. I'm just pulling it out. Just give me 1 second. Okay. Yeah, I think I got it. I'm just cutting it. Just give me a second. Okay. This itself will take some time for us to cover today. I will just do it for you. So, understanding the three modes and their influence, that is the theme that we are going to discuss now. Okay, so let me just share the screen with you. Okay, so we will just understand, because this, in this verse, Krishna is talking about the three modes. He says, Tribir gunamayer bhaver evis sarvam idam jagat mohitam nabijanati mamebhya paramavyayam. The whole world bewildered by the objects and persons made of the three gunas, does not know me, the unchanging, who am above all of those things. So here we will try to understanding the three modes and their influence on bhakti and worship. You know, how the three modes affect a person. Okay, we will try to understand this. So here, even though this is little bit very jumbled thing, but I will just explain this. So here Krishna says, okay, so the three modes are there. The three modes can affect three things. Okay. The three modes can affect one's pure Shastric faith. Okay. Or the three modes can affect one's nature, or the swabhava of the sadhakas can be affected by the three modes. And the three modes can affect our something called a sentimental faith also. Not everyone may have proper Shastric faith or scriptural faith. Someone may have just experiential faith or sentimental faith. So all these three things can be affected by the three modes. And when they are affected, what results from that influence of the three modes, we will try to understand. Okay. For example, if someone's pure devotional, pure Shastric faith is not at all affected by the three modes, then that person will press pure devotional service. He will have pure devotional faith. Okay. But if that pure Shastric faith is mixed with Sattva Guna or Rajoguna or Tamoguna, then it will lead to mixed devotional faith. It will make one practice mixed devotional service. Even though they will worship Krishna because their faith is based on the Shastras, but because that faith is contaminated by the three modes, therefore what they will do, they will worship the Supreme Lord for material benefits, influenced by either Sattva Guna or Rajoguna or Tamoguna. If they are influenced by Sattva Guna, they will worship the Lord for liberation. If they are influenced by Rajoguna, then they will worship the Lord for some material benefits. If they are influenced by Tamoguna, they will worship the Lord for causing some violence to others like that. Okay. So this is how the three modes, when they affect the scriptural faith, it leads to different forms of worship of the Supreme Lord. Okay. So now, the three modes can also affect the swabhava or the nature of asadaka. So if the three modes affects the nature of a sadhaka, then how does that manifest? He says, let's say mode of goodness. If mode of goodness influences a sadhaka, then he will have a tendency to be very clean, very regular. He will have clarity of thinking. So these are the qualities when mode of goodness influences a person. Okay. When mode of passion influences a person, then it leads to greed, lust, and such things. And mode of ignorance influences a person, it leads to lethargy, sleep, etc. So in this way, the three modes can affect the swabhava of a sadhaka also. Okay. And the three modes can also affect the sentimental faith that one may possess, you know, which is not guided by the scriptures. So what does that lead to? That leads to various different forms of worship out of sentiment. So people who are influenced by mode of goodness, they may end up worshipping the devatas or the demigods. People who are influenced by mode of passion, they may end up worshipping the yakshas, rakshasas, like that. And people who are influenced by the mode of ignorance, they may worship the pretas, bhuta ganas, like that. So if you see sadhakas like us, okay, sadhakas like us, we have pure devotional faith. So our faith is Shastric faith, and that faith is not affected by the three modes, but we have our nature, our swabhava, or our conditioned nature, as we call, that is influenced by these three modes, because of which sometimes we feel greedy, sometimes we feel lusty, sometimes we are very clean when we are influenced by the mode of goodness, regular. But sometimes, you know, when our nature is influenced by mode of ignorance, there is lethargy, sleep, lack of clarity, like that. Okay. So this is the position of a sadhaka. So I will just show some proofs for you from the shastras. So I spoke about modes influencing the pure shastric faith. Now you see here, modes influencing faith. First, let us try to understand about pure faith. What is pure faith? Anyabhilashita shunyam, jnana karmadi anavritam, anukulyena krishnanushilanam bhaktiruttama. So this is the definition of pure devotional service. If you see here, it says, anya abhilashita shunyam. There is no other goal other than the goal to attain Krishna. And Krishna is beyond three modes. So because he has no other goal other than Krishna, therefore his goal is beyond three modes. Okay. And jnana karmadi anavritam. Meaning, in order to attain that goal of Krishna, he is not trying to mix his practice of bhakti with jnana, karma, yoga, etc. Okay. Jnana yoga is in mode of goodness. Karma yoga can be in mode of goodness or passion or ignorance, in one of these three, like that. So because his practice and bhakti is beyond three modes, because the bhakti is not mixed by jnana, karma and yoga, therefore the means to attain that goal is also beyond three modes. So therefore, the faith of a person in which he is inspired to perform this kind of bhakti, which has no other goal other than the goal to attain Krishna, and no other means, faith in no other means than pure devotional service, that faith is beyond three modes. Trigunatit, you know, it is beyond three modes. But sometimes, Kapila Dev in the third canto describes about a person whose pure devotional faith is mixed with the three modes. Okay. For example, tamasic. When it is influenced by tamogun or mode of ignorance, then what happens? The angry person, devoid of compassion, who worships me, who worships Krishna, with intentions, which means with aspiration for violence, pride, hatred. So which means he is worshipping Krishna based on shastras, but instead of asking for Krishna or a relationship with Krishna, he is telling, oh Krishna, you know, that person is earning more than me. Just make sure that he earns less than me, like that. So this is tamoguni, you know. Let his business fail, like that. One may offer prayers to Krishna. You know, this is tamoguni. Okay. And rajoguni bhakti, he says, he who worships me in the forms of deities and others, with desires for other objects, with goals of material gain, fame or wealth, he is rajasic in his bhakti. Okay. So he is following the shastras because the shastras recommend that one should worship Krishna. But then that shastric faith or the scriptural faith is influenced by the mode of passion. So therefore, instead of worshipping Krishna and asking for a relationship with Krishna, he is worshipping Krishna and asking for name, fame, glorification, wealth, material objects, like that. Similarly, a person in the mode of goodness, you know, or a person whose scriptural faith is influenced by the mode of goodness, he worships Krishna with a desire to destroy karma. Oh, I don't want to suffer in this world. I want liberation. So when he is worshipping Krishna, because the scriptures say, which means he has scriptural faith, but that scriptural faith is influenced by mode of goodness, because of which he is not worshipping Krishna to establish a relationship with Krishna. He is worshipping Krishna for liberation. Okay. So you see here, the faith here, the pure Shastric faith is when it is contaminated by the three modes, it leads to worshipping Krishna with ulterior motives and through means which are not necessarily pure devotional means. Okay. So this is actually how the three modes influence the scriptural faith. Okay. So now we saw the three modes can also influence the conditioned nature of the sadhaka. Okay. So this is described in the fourteenth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna says, "Tatra sattvam nirmalatva prakashakam anamayam sukha sangena badnati jnana sangena chanaga." The mode of sattva is peaceful and it gives knowledge because of its purity, but it binds the jiva with false conceptions of happiness and knowledge. Oh, I am fine. I am quite happy, like that. This is the influence of mode of goodness. What about mode of passion? Rajo ragatmakam viddi Krishna sanga samudbhavam tan nibadnati kaunteya karma sangena dehinam. O son of Kunti, know that rajas or mode of passion. What is the nature of mode of passion? Ragatmakam. Okay. It is mainly characterized by mutual attraction between men and women. Okay. So that is the main characteristic of mode of passion. So, and which gives rise to longing for the unattained and attachment to the attained. So whatever we have not attained, we have a longing for that. Whatever we have already attained, we develop attachment for that. So this is how the three modes affect the nature. Now, if you see a classic sadhaka, like all of us, okay, a sadhaka, for us, you will see, if someone asks us, who is to be worshipped? We will say, Krishna. Why do you feel so? Oh, because the Shastras say. And how should you worship Krishna? You will say, oh, by the ninefold process of bhakti. And why should you worship Krishna? To establish a relationship with Krishna. So if this is the answer that you will give, then your faith is pure. Okay, your Shastric faith is pure. Now, but while worshipping Krishna in this way, we may sometimes feel attraction to the opposite sex, or we may sometimes feel, you can say, a longing for attaining something which we have not attained, or a deep attachment for something we have already attained, even though we know this is not good for my spiritual life. Okay, so this is this contaminated consciousness. So which means our conditioned nature is influenced by the three modes, but our faith is still pure. Okay, like that. So okay, so now you see here, and similarly tamogun. So what is the nature of tamas? Know that tamas, which is produced from ignorance, which causes confusion for all living beings in the form of opposite knowledge. Okay, it binds the jiva with inattention, laziness and sleep. Okay, now you see, your faith says, your faith which is beyond three modes says, abhinnatvad nama namino, the holy name is non-different from Krishna. Okay, do you accept? Yes, 100% I accept. But then when we sit for chanting, after 10 minutes, you see, you're already dozing. Okay. But you say, hey, but you just told me that you believe that the holy name is non-different from Krishna, but you're sleeping. Yeah. So why? Because we have a faith which is beyond three modes, but we are still grappling with a conditioned nature which is still influenced by the three modes. So therefore, this tug of war goes on. That is why as soon as you get up, you feel regret. Oh, why did I sleep? It's japa time. How did I doze off? So we feel that regret. Why do we get that regret? Because that regret is born out of our faith, which is beyond three modes. Why are we feeling sleepy then? Oh, that sleep is born out of our nature, which is being influenced by the mode of ignorance. Right? So this is. So therefore, we saw some proofs for, these two things. Okay, how pure Shastric faith can be influenced by the three modes, how the Swabhava can be influenced by the three modes. Now, how someone can have sentimental faith or non-Shastric faith, which can also be influenced by the three modes. And this leads to something very interesting. Okay, so... before that, in Madhurya Kadambini Shila, Krishna Chakravarti Thakur describes about five types of influences sadhaka may experience because of the influence of the three modes in our practice of devotional service: sleep, distraction, temporary disinterest in spiritual topics, tendency towards past bad habits, a deep taste for material enjoyment and all that. So this is when, the very fact that we want to practice Krishna consciousness, we want to chant the holy names, we want to worship the deities, that is coming from pure devotional faith, which is unmixed by the three modes. And still our influence of this laya, vikshepa, apratipatti, kashaya and rasaswada is due to our conditioned nature, which is still within the grips of the three modes. Okay. So, that is why it is mentioned, Tada rajastamo bhava kama lobadayasche chetayate ranaviddham sitam sattve vidati. The mind becomes unaffected by lust, greed, anger, hatred and illusion, which arise from rajas and tamas. Then the mind becomes fixed in the form of the Lord at the stage of asakti, like that it is mentioned. So, how then we will now try to understand this third aspect that we saw, that how the three modes can influence the sentimental faith that one may have also. So this is where Krishna says, Krishna in the 16th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, where he is talking about what is divine and what is demoniac. He initially talks about many qualities and all that, but finally he says, if there is one very critical or defining quality that differentiates between divine and demoniac, he says it is following the shastras. Yes, shastra vidhim utsrijya vartate kamakaratah. He says, he who gives up the rules of the scripture and acts according to his own whim, okay, he does not attain perfection in this life or the next life. He does not attain happiness. He does not attain his supreme goal. Nothing. Okay. So this is an asura. This is demoniac mentality. But so this is how he ends 16th chapter. But Arjuna has a very important question. Arjuna says, Krishna, but not everyone who gives up the scriptures act whimsically. Sometimes people who give up scriptures are also seem to very faithfully worship someone. So he says, Ye Shastra Vidhim Utsrijya Yajante kamakaratah, tesham nishta tuka Krishna, sattvamaho rajastama. So he says, there are two categories whom you mentioned, the divine they accept Shastra and worship according to Shastra. And then you said the demoniac, they reject Shastra and act whimsically. But Arjuna says, Krishna, but there is a third category whom I have observed also. What is the third category? He says, they reject Shastra, but they seem to worship with some faith. Who are these people? Are they, do they belong to the first category or the second category? But they seem to be a different category to me. So Krishna, in answer to this, he says, Trivida bhavati shraddha, dehinamsa swabhavaja, satviki rajasi chaiva, tamasi cheti tam shrunu. He says, the faith of the embodied beings, dehinam shraddha, trivida bhavati, is of three types. But what kind of faith is this? He says, swabhavaja, sa swabhavaja, a kind of faith which arises from their previous impressions. Okay. Satviki rajasi chaiva tamasi cheti tamshno. He says, it can be satvik faith or rajasic faith or tamasic faith. Hear about it, like that Krishna says here. Okay. So, what kind of faith? So, he says, the faith by which one worships the devatas and other beings while giving up the rules of scripture because of laziness or difficulties should be understood to arise from virtuous and sinful impressions from previous lives. So whatever he has experienced, based on his experience, he has accumulated some impressions, either which are predominantly mode of goodness, predominantly mode of passion, or predominantly mode of ignorance. So based on the predominance of impressions, they develop a faith to worship particular personalities. If mode of goodness is predominant, then they become attracted to worship the demigods. When mode of passion is predominant, they become attracted to worship yakshas and rakshasas. When mode of ignorance is predominant, then they get attracted to worshipping pretas, bhutaganas, like that. So he says, that faith is of three types, arising from the states of sattva, rajas and tamas, for the beginningless, unrelenting births of the embodied souls in beginningless contact with the three gunas of prakriti. So since eternal time, because the living entities in this material world are in touch with the three gunas, they have experiences which are influenced by the three gunas, because of which they get attraction to worship particular personalities. Okay. So here he says, they do not have the spiritual intelligence arising from scripture taught by the devotees, which will allow them to change those impressions or swabhava. They do not have spiritual intelligence which is arising from scriptures. Therefore, the three types of faith which arise from those impressions appear. Okay. Faith born from scriptures is different. It brings about performance of actions only according to the scriptural directions and not because of the impressions of the three gunas. So, Shastric faith is different actually. Okay. So, I will not go into detail because I will just come to the point. So in the fourth verse, he says, Yajante Satvika Devan, Yaksha Rakshamsi Rajasaha, Pretan Bhutaganams Chanye, Yajante Tamasajana. He says, those with Satvik nature, they worship the devatas. Satvik nature means what? So here, Satvik nature means Satvik non scriptural faith. Okay, or sentimental faith. Okay. And similarly, those who have rajasic sentimental faith, they worship the yakshas and rakshasas. Those who have tamasic sentimental faith, they worship the pretas and bhutaganas. Okay. So he says, those persons who with faith born of their previous impressions, worship Satvik Devatas such as Vasu and Rudra without the discrimination of scripture, very clear, are called as Satvika and so on. Okay, like that. Anyways, so I just wanted to touch this topic about what is the scope of the influence of the three modes. Because when we say three modes, of course, the three modes affect different things. So many times the question arises, are we pure devotees? Or are we within three modes? Are we beyond three modes or within three modes? The answer is, we means what? If by we, you are referring to my faith, then I am a pure devotee. My faith is beyond three modes. If by we, you are referring to my conditioned nature, then I am very, 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 very far away from being transcendental to the three modes. So therefore, are you pure or are you contaminated? So you have to define you. If by you are referring to my faith, then with all humility at my disposal, I say, yes, I am pure. If you are referring to my swabhava or my conditioned nature, then no, I am certainly not pure. Like that. Any quick discussion points, comments, questions based on what we have discussed till now on this topic of how do we understand the influence of the three modes? What do the three modes influence? You know, this is something which is very, very foundational to our understanding, because we talk about modes. We should know what modic. This is very critical. Any quick discussion points, comments, questions, anything anyone would like to share? I think there is something in the chat box. I will take that first. In the meantime, maybe you are still trying to figure out, you know, what we have discussed and trying to assimilate it. Or some others may have already heard this discussion from me and you already have understood it. But either ways, if you have any quick questions, please go ahead and ask. There is one question. At what stage faith becomes fully matured or 100% pure? At the beginning stage only. It is 100% pure from the beginning stage, but it is 100% pure but very weak. There is a difference between purity of faith and strength of faith. For a devotee, right from the beginning, his faith is pure but very weak and vulnerable. And that vulnerable and weak faith gradually becomes nourished by hearing, chanting and association, and it becomes stronger and stronger and stronger. But from the beginning only, it is pure faith. Okay. Okay, another question. How and when does it get influenced? I mean, fluctuations of modes in one's life. Is it because of association? How can one control not to slip into lower modes? Association is the only means. Bad association is the cause of slipping into lower modes. Good association is the cause of transcending the modes. So association is the only solution. Anything else anyone would like to share? Yes, Kesho Priya Mataji.
Krishna Prabhuji, Dandavat Pranams, Prabhuji. Prabhuji, just now, what I understood is our faith as a sadhaka, our faith is beyond three modes, but we are all within the three modes as a practitioner, no, Prabhuji. That's what you're explaining finally.
No. Again, your usage of terminology should be very clear. We means
sadhakas.
Very clearly. We means sadhakas means we refers to faith or we refers to swabhava.
Prabhuji, faith is pure, beyond three modes, you explain, no, Prabhuji. So this we I refer to swabhava.
Yeah, that is why I'm asking. So okay, because if you just like that go and tell we are within three modes. So that needs
Prabhuji, clarity. Till as of now, I'm identifying with my body only, you know, like I'm not totally, I didn't come out of my body. My recognition okay, now, out of body.
Now my question is, do you wish to continue identifying with your body?
No, Prabhuji, absolutely not.
Why not? Why don't you continue identifying with your body?
Because of the Shastric, because of reading from Shastra, I understand it is wrong. It is not me.
That is,
I am beyond these three.
That is your faith. That is your faith.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Prabhuji, what so, I wanted to ask is, there is a gap now, Prabhuji. Like, my faith is beyond three modes, but I am, as of now, identifying with the three modes. That's Svabhava. So, at any stage, like, I am just working so hard for something which is totally inconceivable to me as of now. Because for me, my capacity is within the three modes.
That is the point. So, if it is inconceivable, now my question is, if it is inconceivable, why are you working hard?
Only faith on words of Acharya, Prabhuji.
There are so many things in which you can have your faith. No? There are so many things in which you can have your faith. Why are you having faith here?
We feel the word of Acharya is true. Like, this is correct.
That faith is beyond three modes. That faith is beyond three modes. I am not telling anything else. That faith is beyond three modes. So, that is why I gave the example of we are in a train which is running from
yes, Prabhuji.
You know that example, right?
Yeah, Prabhuji.
Even though, so within the train, we are in a train which is running from Mathura to Bombay. But you are a soul, you are a person in the train wishing to reach Mathura. So you are walking towards Mathura inside the train. The train itself is moving towards Bombay. So even though, so for all practical purposes, you are moving towards Bombay only. Okay. If you see, effectively you are moving towards Bombay. That is true. I am not saying no, but the point is, if I get inside the train and see, I can clearly see that you want to move in the opposite direction. That wanting to move in the opposite direction is your faith. Even though you may effectively be moving in the direction of Bombay.
So but ultimately, I'll reach Bombay only, no, Prabhuji, in this example.
That is where the scope of that analogy ends there.
Correct.
So therefore, you should know what is the scope of that analogy. There is a if you are using a material analogy to explain a spiritual thing, it has a limited scope. You cannot stretch it beyond that. Okay, then I have to change the analogy or refine that analogy, which I have not done yet, to accommodate all those small details. So therefore, if you see action of a person, action of a person is, action of a sadhaka is a vector sum of two elements. One is his faith, another is his svabhava. Faith, which is beyond three modes, and svabhava, which is within three modes.
Yes, Prabhuji.
So sometimes you may end up performing an act influenced by your faith. Like every day morning, you get up to chant your rounds. Now you have joined this Zoom call to attend Bhagavad Gita class. So these are actions which is born out of your pure devotional faith. So you have joined this session because of pure devotional faith. So now my question is, how many of you, can you please raise your hands? How many of you either dozed while hearing this session, or got distracted, checked your WhatsApp messages, or someone called and you were like, what's happening here? What's happening there? How many of you got influenced like that? You can be honest. I will not judge you, because even while speaking, I many times get influenced like that. Right. So the point is that the very fact that you all joined this session is influenced by pure devotional faith, and the fact that you got distracted and you dozed off during this session is due to the influence of the modes. So many times for sadhakas, the actions are a vector sum of the two, you know. It is sometimes influenced by the three modes. It is sometimes influenced by the swabhava, which is within three modes. And sometimes it is influenced by the faith, which is beyond three modes. So therefore, you cannot see the action of a person and say that he's a pure devotee or a mixed devotee like that. Because where is that impetus for that action coming from? Is it coming from his faith or his swabhava? We can never tell, actually. Very difficult to tell. So that is very important to understand.
Actually, my question is still, I am in swabhava influence of modes, no? So at any time, I may get distracted also, no, Prabhuji? As we, even though we are progressing.
Yeah, you can get distracted. You can get distracted. Your swabhava may get distracted. Your swabhava may become very strongly influenced by either rajogun or tamogun, like that. It is possible. But still, that does not change your faith. Like, you know, the train may be going slowly towards Bombay. The train may pick speed and it may rush really fast towards Bombay. But the person inside the train is walking towards Mathura. So even though ultimately when the train is going slow, you may go towards Bombay at 20 kilometers per hour. When the train is going fast, you may go towards Bombay at 100 kilometers per hour. That is true. But inside the train, you are walking towards Mathura only. So how does that change your faith? So our faith, which is beyond three modes, is existing along with the conditioning, which is within three modes. And gradually by practicing this bhakti, influenced by that faith, which is beyond three modes, slowly the swabhava, which is influenced by the three modes, will become more and more and more and more purified. So that is what is anartha nivritti.
So this only Bhagavad Gita also speaks, Navraji, like even if I leave the body with incomplete devotional service, my next lifetime I can start with the pure devotional faith itself. Is it true, Prabhuji?
Yeah.
So immediately, like in the next birth, we'll be having pure devotional faith from the beginning itself.
Yes.
Okay, Prabhuji. So it's just a continuous process. We may change body, maybe we may not be completed within this lifetime, but our faith will be protected for sure, no, Prabhuji, even if I take another body.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you, Prabhuji. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Sukhava Mati.
One second.
Your voice is not clear, Mataji. I'm sorry. Can you speak close to the mic? We are not able to hear
now? Can you hear it now?
Yes, Mataji.
Okay, yeah. Thank you so much. Thank you, Prabhu. Obeisances. Thank you for your guidance. Now, I'm a little confused. I'm always confused, but I was thinking that the swabhava, is that our natural nature? Is it associated with our soul self, swabhava, our swabhava? Or is that, I'm thinking, I'm confusing that with swarup. I could be confusing. Tell me.
No. Sometimes the word swabhava is also used to indicate the natural nature of the soul also. But we are not using it in that sense right here. When we are talking about swabhava, we are talking about the conditioned nature and not the constitutional nature.
Oh, okay. So, because I was thinking my swabhava, like you were saying, the swabhava can be influenced. So that's the conditioned nature, can be influenced, even though the soul nature and the heart, you know, has pure faith.
Yeah.
The conditioned nature, we get impacted by it. But wouldn't that be kind of like, I mean, doesn't Krishna kind of create that to kind of remind us, hey, by the way, you are jiva tattva and you get influenced, so pay attention to what you're associating with? Is that part of the reason for that?
Yeah. I mean, that is something which we can understand. I mean, not that all jivas understand that. But if one gets guided by Guru, Sadhu and Shastra, then one can understand, one can get reminded, yes, I am just an insignificant jiva and I can anytime get influenced by the three modes like that.
Yeah. Okay. So thank you for, and so how do we know when you use a Sanskrit word in one way and then another way? I guess it gets a little confusing.
Yeah, I mean, I think throughout the discussion today, I have made it, for example, you gave the example of Swabhava. I have very clearly clarified that it is conditioned nature. So,
okay. So I guess I missed that part.
Yeah, I think you got a doubt because probably you were used to that word being used to indicate the nature of the soul. Because the word Swabhava in itself does not very clearly clarify it. It need not necessarily refer to conditioned nature because Swabhava means nature.
So oh, nature.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, nature can be constitutional nature or conditioned nature. But okay. Here in this okay. context, because we are talking about lethargy, sleep, greed, lust, etc., this is definitely
conditioned nature.
Yeah.
Thank you for the clarification. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Hari Bol.
Shyamlal Prabhu.
Oh, Prabhuji, I just raised my hand when you asked the question. How many
I
got distracted?
So. Yes. Thank you. I thought so. Thank you,
Prabhu. Thank you.
Okay. So thank you all very much for your patient listening and your enthusiastic participation. We will continue this discussion further next Friday. Srila Prabhupad ki jai. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur Pad ki jai. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much.